Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Negotiation. Today, I sit down with Antoinetta Becker, Director of Consumer Economy at the China-Britain Business Council, to delve into the dynamic and ever-evolving e-commerce landscape of China. Antoinetta, an expert on the Chinese market, discusses the upcoming China Consumer event to be hosted by the CBBC, its strategic importance for UK brands, and the latest trends influencing China's consumer economy. She also delves into China's e-commerce sector, contrasting China's ecosystem with the UK's digital marketplaces, and identifies high-growth consumer sectors that UK brands can capitalize on. Antoinetta also provides her perspective on whether British brands should emphasize their national identity in the Chinese market. Lastly, she addresses common challenges UK brands encounter in China and offers strategic advice for navigating these complexities successfully. Enjoy.
It's not a secret that some of the sectors are now slowing down, and then there are others that continue to grow at double digit. A majority of our clients have been particularly successful over the last few years in beauty and health and wellness, are now facing headwinds. So they're having to evolve marketing strategy to suit, you know, the new demand of Chinese consumers. There are other categories in, you know, outdoor equipment, in leisure wear, outdoor sports wear, pet care, pet accessories, etc., which are on the rise and look particularly promising.
Home to over 4 billion people, the Asia-Pacific region boasts one of the most powerful consumer markets on the planet. Not only is it home to half of the world's under 30 population, but it's also home to more than half the world's internet users. It's a market that no globally minded organization should ignore. But entering markets like China, Japan, or Southeast Asia is no easy task. Just ask the likes of Microsoft, Google, Uber, and Facebook. However, times are changing, and with the right partners, doors are slowly opening as more and more companies find success growing their key markets in APAC. I myself spent 8 years in China, mostly as a venture capitalist, helping early-stage tech companies grow in the Asia-Pacific market successfully. This show is dedicated to uncovering and examining successful Asia market entry and growth strategies by interviewing the experts who've done it before and truly understand what it takes to be successful in the region. My name is Todd Embley, and welcome to The Negotiation. Brought to you by WPIC Marketing and Technologies.
Antoinetta, welcome to The Negotiation Podcast.
Hi, Todd. I'm pleased to be here.
All right. Where in the world are you sitting today that we're recording you from?
So I'm in beautiful Bath, which is in the west of England, and this is my home. So I share my time between Bath and London, where my office is located. And it's a World Heritage Center. It's also a kind of cultural magnet for Chinese tourists. So I'm being surrounded by Mandarin-speaking people all day long here.
Now, can you tell our audience a little bit about your career trajectory and how you came to have a career and build a career focused on China?
Well, I mean, China is not a life choice you kind of make lightly, right? So when I arrived in China, which was like ages ago, it was like late 80s, early 90s, I was meant to spend just a few years learning Chinese language and studying Chinese literature. So I never even had a clue I was going to spend a lifetime there. So I ended up spending over 20 years learning, working, you know, setting up home there in Beijing. And what I really discovered there is that, you know, the more you try to learn about Chinese culture, you know, the more you needed to be part of it. I think it's difficult to integrate in Chinese society, much more difficult than you would do in any European country, for instance, or Canada or the US. So it requires a huge effort on, you know, an individual to kind of come to grips with the societal structure, you know, with the role that the bureaucracy plays in running the society, with the people primarily. So I think the more time I spent there, you know, the more fascinated I became with everything from language to culture to people. They're extremely resilient, endlessly optimistic, very entrepreneurial, And this is a great national spirit, which you kind of come to embody while you're part of the Chinese society. So I started my career as a business reporter for the Economist Intelligence Unit. This was after I finished my studies in Peking University, and then went on freelancing for other Western media publications, reporting on primarily at the time, you know, the transformation of Chinese state-owned enterprises into the national champions we see today. It was the first days of their, you know, global ambitions. It was also the time when foreign business was investing massively into the Chinese market. It was the days of the very heady double-digit economic growth. So that's how it started, and the rest is history, really.
Well, I love what you said about the Chinese being very entrepreneurial. I feel like in China, throughout the country, they all know that they have an amazing opportunity to build their own wealth and to create their own future. And they all know that, and they're all willing to put in the work and the hustle, and they get after it. The level of success that they want to achieve is in the palm of their hands, as much or as little as they want to take advantage of it. And it's that optimism and that hustle and just the speed of China. We always talk about the speed of China. It's hard to imagine how fast things move there. And you really have to kind of get on your horse and keep up, or you're going to be left behind.
They're forever striving forward endlessly. And it's intoxicating to be part of it.
Yeah. And it's competitive. And if you're not striving forward, then it's just next person up. And the person behind you will now be the person in front of you. Now, let's talk about your current role at the China-Britain Business Council. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So the council is essentially a business network that supports UK companies entering and growing in the market. We've been in business for 70 years. So imagine the changes that have happened in the Chinese society and economy during this time. So we have evolved with times, probably not as rapidly as the Chinese economy has evolved. But, you know, our credo remains the same, right? So we support UK companies understand the market and succeed in it. So within the council, I look after the consumer portfolio. So I work with a range of members in the consumer industry. So that would include retail, fashion, lifestyle, beauty, health and wellness, creative industries. And I would also work commercially with clients that the council has, advising them on brand strategy and cross-cultural communication, etc.
One of the big things that we want to talk about is this upcoming China consumer event that is being hosted by the CBBC. It's in October. A lot of significance for UK brands looking to engage with China. So my first question is, what topics will be covered and why were these topics selected to be featured at the conference?
If I kind of take a step back first to introduce why we decided to launch the program, why the focus on Chinese consumer, why would the Chinese consumer matter to UK companies or European companies? We do attract a lot of European companies to come and attend the event. I think when we set off on that program, it was really when the UK was coming out of the pandemic, and we were really still recovering from the lockdown. There was a huge gap understanding between our clients and members. Many of them do have in-house teams in the Chinese market, and between them and their teams and their consumers as to what was going on in the market, right? The borders were closed. No one could travel to China. No one could visit any trade fairs or shows. So that constant flow of information and update on the world's fastest growing or, you know, fastest developing market with changes every minute was taken away. So we filled the gap. And when we started, we were first online, I think, for the first year. It was a UK-China Consumer Week in 2020. We had tremendous response. People were interested. People supported us, you know, so that gave us the courage to the following year to launch a physical in-person event in London. So we looked to introduced the importance of the Chinese consumers as a driving force for innovation and growth for UK companies. We look to highlight the rapid digital change that was happening, also the rise of the Chinese consumer brands, particularly in the luxury sector, and how this was going to affect our clients. And the event has gone from strength to strength. So we are now in the third edition. We are collaborating with WPIC, who are actually doing an extensive consumer survey to present at the event. And we are hugely excited, you know, to welcome UK brands, Chinese brands, and other guests to the event on the 14th of October. What kind of themes we look to cover? I think Chinese consumers, who they are, why are they important, who are the consumer tribes, you know, as you probably know, have spent significant time in the Chinese market yourself. It's not a homogeneous market. It's incredibly diverse and it's very fragmented. So the more you understand the different consumer tribes, subcultures, generational groups, it's particularly important for people who look to succeed in the market, whether you're selling a branded product or a branded service. So we will look at how the consumer market has evolved over a year through WPIC survey. Then we will look at the shift in marketing, which is happening in the Chinese society, which mirrors what's happening in other places as well, but probably much more rapidly and on a bigger scale. So there's a huge shift from selling a product at a particular price in a particular place towards sharing experience, you know, triggering an emotional response, engaging your consumers in a particular emotional experience to retain their attention within the brand core values, right? So that's from marketing point. Then we will look at the innovation that Chinese e-commerce platforms and consumers drive globally. I think we have brands that are in the digital space, which will be presenting at the event. We have sessions that will look into social commerce in China. I think this is one of our most popular sessions because it's so different from what we have here in the West, and also such an untapped opportunity for brands to begin to sell to the market. We will look at Hong Kong. Hong Kong has always been a gateway to the Chinese market. And how is it evolving? Does it still retain that role? Do you need to consider a China plus one strategy for Greater China when you are engaging with your consumers? We will also look at creating a China strategy nowadays, considering the the slowdown of economic growth, kind of low consumer confidence brands and clients are grappling with in the market. So what a China strategy should look like in the new normal. And we'll also examine consumer attitudes towards sustainability in the Chinese market. You can never cover all the range of topics that are valid and important for UK brands in the Chinese market, even within a day. But that's a selection of the topics we will be looking at.
Let's quickly run through maybe some of the interesting speakers and then who should attend and what you're hoping that they are happy to have taken away from that.
So let's start with who should attend. So we are in the business of doing a lot of education on the Chinese market. The whole team, including myself, we have years and years of experience in the Chinese market. So we do a range of consumer masterclasses, other business cultural training, etc. China consumer is not that. So we are not the one who will be sharing wisdom, right? This is a peer-to-peer forum. We have close to 30 speakers. About 26 of those are brands, a mix of UK and Chinese brands, e-commerce platforms. We are there to examine best practices, right? And to actually shed a light on what's happening in the market through the people who are actually trading with the market, who are designing China strategies, those that are implementing the China strategies, and the marketeers for those brands, right? So the people who should attend it, who definitely derive value from that, are the business development teams, the marketing teams, and obviously anyone who is in the C-suite, right? So we do have a number of CEOs and commercial officer attending attending the forum and being generous to share their insight and all the challenges they're facing when navigating the Chinese market. So it is a peer-to-peer forum. Having curated the program myself with the help of so many colleagues and partners, it will be very difficult to pick out some speakers and leave out the others. I think every one of the speakers is there because they would offer an insight or a snippet of information and advice to other counterparts, right? They cover the narrative or participate in the discussion from a different angle. So I think for the purpose of, well, you know, I think to pick out a couple, I would single out perhaps Wedgwood and Brompton Bikes. And the reason for that is because both are quintessentially British companies, British brands, which are selling products that are considered intrinsically Chinese to the Chinese market. So obviously Wedgwood is a heritage brand. You know, it's got 260 years of porcelain making in the heart of England. It has a royal warrant. It has supplied several generations of royal families and continues to be proudly made in the UK. So it's also a luxury brand. And considering everything considered, you know, the China invented the porcelain like about 1,000 years ago during the Shang Dynasty. You know, it's quite a story to tell. How do they continue to position themselves as a brand that wins the hearts of Chinese consumers, right? What is it about them that would persuade Chinese consumers to spend on that, right? So that's one. Brompton Bikes is a very different story. They're also proudly made in the UK. When I first arrived in China, there were no Brompton Bikes, you know, but China was the kingdom. Beijing, where I arrived first, was the kingdom of bicycles. So you couldn't really sell a bike to the Chinese consumers at the time. But now you can. And they've sold over 1 million bikes. Their bikes are foldable. And they're the height of sophistication, right? So the R&D is amazing. And they're building communities of Brompton bike fans across the main cities. And it is the kind of motivation to give something back to their fans and to the Chinese communities. And that is just some of the speakers you'll be able to hear from. We also have an inspirational Chinese fragrance brand called Melt Season, already singled out by Estee Lauder for investment. We have Waitrose, a beloved UK brand, coming to talk about how they engage with the Chinese consumers. And more and more.
Now that we have covered that and interest is high, can you tell us a little bit about the registration details and where people can go to find out more information?
Oh, that's very easy. So if people just need to go onto our website, and that's www.cbbc, which stands for the China Britain Business Council. So cbbc.org. And you will see a big banner with China Consumer. So I think registration is open until the 10th of October, but we are almost at capacity. So I would suggest to those that still want to join us to register as soon as possible.
You need to get on that quick. Okay, let's talk a little bit more broadly about China, and especially maybe some of the exciting trends from China's e-commerce landscape that UK brands should be aware of right now. So some of the exciting trends, first of all, that you're liking, and then maybe we can cap that with how the e-commerce landscape in China compares with that of the UK.
Okay, can I start with the second part of it? I think because
you absolutely can.
So I can't even imagine anything more different. You know, I only go on the to the UK when I want to shop. So Chinese consumers go to e-commerce. Well, they use e-commerce to socialize, to form communities, and for entertainment. I think shopping is probably an afterthought to that. So e-commerce in China is everything, including shopping, right? And it's so much more complex than anything we have here in the West, right? And it continues to evolve very, very rapidly. So it's got to provide education, it's got to provide entertainment, it's got to provide a way to find, you know, peers and soulmates and everything. And, you know, kind of during that process, you know, consumers will buy things, right? So really, really different from what we have here in the West. And that's predicated by the nature of Chinese consumers. You know, they're very curious. They're very socially connected, you know, the role of individual versus, you know, the kind of family group and the community is very different from what we have here. But also, I think we see the, you know, the kind of the effects of the COVID lockdown when a lot of these trends, you know, actually, which were already underway, were accelerated, right? So what do we see in terms of particular trends? I mean, I would say that at the moment, you know, in China's e-commerce, it's all about social commerce and live commerce, right? So social commerce is a content or interest-driven commerce, as opposed to shelf economy, you know, where everything is presented on kind of, you know, virtual retailer shelves and you go there and find it. Content commerce and interest commerce is generated through content which consumers browse, identify of interest to them, and then could trigger, trigger them to kind of follow a particular brand or to kind of browse their product range and particularly and potentially purchase. Live commerce is probably the biggest trend we see at the moment. It's all through live streaming. I think WPIC has data which they will analyze at the event, but essentially more than a quarter of the sales, I think, online now are through live stream. And then that's opened the opportunities for a range of new players. You know, anyone could be a live streamer. Obviously, there are those that are doing it professionally through through multi-channel agencies. So these are the big live streamer stars. But for instance, Wedgwood speaker, he is the vice president of the brand. You know, he had done a live stream in a kind of series of live streams that are called the Boss live stream. So the kind of the employees of the companies, from the boss to the, to the ordinary employee, they all can do a live stream, right? And that is something that is very popular in China because it entertains. It's the entertainment part of it which triggers the spending, or the content presented these particular live streamers that could, fit a particular aspiration or desire or address particular concern of those consumers. Apart from that, I would say e-commerce is incredibly fragmented, totally decentralized, and really very rapidly evolving, as you yourself mentioned. So you can't come up with a three-year e-commerce plan. There isn't such a thing in China. It would have changed before the end of the first year. So what was relevant like a year ago, you know, is now being kind of overtaken by new e-commerce platforms. And you yourself mentioned some of the names of those, you know, it's like Pinduoduo and, you know, Douyin and Xiaohongshu, etc.
What consumer sectors are currently experiencing the most growth in China that UK brands should be aware of?
I think we will really discuss that in great detail at the conference. I think it's not a secret that some of the sectors are now slowing down, and then there are others that continue to grow at double digit. So I think we had, I think a majority of our clients have been particularly successful over the last few years in beauty and health and wellness, are now facing headwinds. So they're having to evolve marketing strategy to suit you know, the new demand of Chinese consumers. There are other categories in, you know, outdoor equipment, in leisure wear, outdoor sports wear, pet care, pet accessories, etc., which are on the rise and are particularly promising. Here, I just wanted to highlight a very niche consumer sector, which I think it's of it's still untapped. That's the fragrance sector. I know it is niche, but it has low penetration in the market compared to the US and Europe. I mean, I think there is data there that the perfume penetration in the US and Europe is about between 50 to 42%, while in China it's low at 5%. So the room for growth is immense. And changing cultural norms and consumer habits are driving the growth of that sector. So there are many domestic brands that are coming into that space, but there is also a lot of growth within the international premium and kind of niche perfume brands that that is notable, right? And I think this is interesting because it wasn't the case even 3 or 4 years ago. So a lot of these domestic champions now are being invested in by the likes of Estee Lauder, L'Oreal, etc., etc. I think one particular trend that I would highlight that underlines many of this growing sector is the Chinese out and on the move, right? So if you look at 3 years ago during COVID, when everybody was at home and everybody was shopping for products that enhanced their mood during lockdown, everybody invested in personal gyms or in some really fancy rice cookers and other, you know, cooking equipment. China is now outside, it's outdoors, and it's also moving. So there is a lot of trekking, cycling, there is climbing, there is glamping, and obviously all of these sports are being practiced with the, you know, all the trappings that are required, you know, whether it is fashion style or sun cream or all of the rest. And the ethnic nomad style is particularly popular, you know, so Chinese consumers want to be outside of the cities. They want to return to nature. So whether it's the Inner Mongolian steppes or it's the Shangri-La, you know, they're out. So they're leaving the cities to reconnect with nature, and they're buying the products and investing in travel and luxury experience that fit that that desire.
Yes, they are out, they are active, they are exploring, they are getting fit, they are getting healthy more and more all the time. Good call out. I wanted to ask about British brands and four British brands, in fact. Should, in your opinion, they lean into their Britishness as they go to China?
It's a very tricky question to ask of someone who is not British, but having worked with a lot of British brands and having lived in China for a lifetime, I can say yes, because Chinese people value authenticity. You can't lie. You cannot lie with Chinese consumers. They're incredibly shrewd. They're incredibly savvy, and they value the connection with something that's authentic, right? So what actually will drive consumer interest is the reinterpretation of what Britishness mean, right? Let's not forget the Chinese consumer are very curious, and they love surprises, you know, they love mystery boxes, they love combination of some peculiar tastes, peculiar brands, you know, everything that is out of the ordinary. Everything that will brighten their day, their experience, right? The novelty of it. So a quirky take, and I mean, no one is better than the British on quirky takes on things, right? So a quirky take on Britishness for a brand is really welcome. And I think I could kind of cite an example this year of a Brit brand, but although there are many, right? A brand collaboration, which is still making the waves, right? So, and again, in my favorite fragrance sector. So Jo Malone, for instance, teaming up with the beloved Paddington Bear. I mean, what a hit, right? I saw Chinese girls snapping those limited edition colognes, right, everywhere, at Gatwick Airport, at their store in Covent Garden. It was just unbelievably successful because it presented a brand which is, you know, considered an elegant and very English, very subtle, in a cute way, right? It was cute. It was And that is what Chinese consumers actually love, right? So here comes the talent and the challenge for our clients and members. You know, look into your DNA and discover new ways to interpret your Britishness, and Chinese consumers will love it.
Antoinette, last question. Navigating the Chinese market or streets or subway systems can be complex. So what are some of the common challenges and pitfalls that UK brands face, and then your advice on how they can overcome them?
Todd, did you say we only have half an hour for that, right? Okay.
Pick your favorite one or two, please.
Okay. There are many things one can mention, right? It's incredibly complex market. It's not going to get easier, right? And it's competitive, right? So what we see as one of the main challenges for British brands and for other European brands is the difficulty of actually articulating a compelling point of difference, right? So branded products are expensive by Chinese standards, right? So why would the Chinese consumer spend? It's so all these products fall within the majority of the products we work with fall within discretionary spend, right? So why would the Chinese consumer spend that on a product which doesn't trigger an emotional association, since they can buy that product probably more affordably from a Chinese brand, right? So being able to identify your unique selling point in the Chinese market with Chinese consumers and being good particularly at one thing, it's a key challenge for UK brands because, you know, they come with the range of attributes and try and sell all of that to the Chinese consumers. They don't care. They want to find the one trigger there that resonates with them, right? Which would persuade them to spend. I'll only list one more challenge is we work with brands which still want to find a reliable Chinese partner and hand the tough job of navigating the Chinese market to them. There is no such a thing. There is no shortcut with the Chinese market. You have to own the knowledge of the market and you have to own the market strategy. Yes, work with your partner. You can't do it without them. But you've got to invest in understanding your consumers, the market, and in building your strategy yourself. And you have to own it and you have to drive it.
Antoinette Becker, Director, Consumer Economy at the China-Britain Business Council. Thank you very much for coming on the show today. We really appreciated your time.
Thank you, Todd.
Now, for everybody listening to the audio only, don't forget that we have the video version as well over at the WPIC YouTube channel. Includes shorts and other information there. For those of you watching the video and you need to go audio only, don't forget you can listen to us on all your favorite podcasting audio platforms. If you don't mind, leave us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate that. And if you have any feedback or you have any guest recommendations, you can always reach us at podcast@wpic.co. But for me, for everybody at the negotiation team, and for Antoinette, thank you very much for listening and or watching, and we will see you next time.
Growing a company is hard. Doing it in a foreign market, exponentially so. the best piece of advice I can give you is not to do it alone. When you start looking at the Asia-Pacific region for further expansion possibilities, and I sincerely hope you do, make sure you choose the right partners to do it with. My good friends at WPIC Marketing and Technologies have almost 20 years of experience helping brands, just like yours, enter China, Japan, and Southeast Asia. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Negotiation, and if you're interested in being a guest or want to connect with me or any of our team, please reach out to us at podcast@wpic.co, and be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.